Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Thank you for joining me on this week's Relax Back UK show. The topic this week is all about diet and health misinformation, particularly when it relates to cancer advice and being online.
We tend to assign more credibility when we see something that has, you know, millions of reactions. That engagement does not mean evidence. It doesn't mean that something is evidence-based. And that's, you know, a fine line for the brain to distinguish.
I speak with Alex Ruani from University College London, and we cover how does misinformation spread, why does it spread, and why does it spread so fast, and how to protect yourself from it. So please do join me for a great show. Thank you. So I spoke to Alex Ruani about health misinformation, in particular about cancer misinformation online. And I started by asking her, where is it that she's doing her research?
Oh, yes. Well, I've been at UCL for nearly a decade now, looking at misinformation, how it originates, how it spreads. But now more recently, I've been looking into the risk. What could go wrong, right, when we fall for something that may not be accurate or misleading? And none of us like to be duped or exploited. So how can we build those cognitive defenses to protect ourselves from misleadingness?
There's an awful lot to chat about. But what I'm hoping is just now we can home in a little bit on some of the things that you see online about cancer, the misinformation that you see about that, and also the sort of people that might be spreading this stuff, because there are an awful lot of people spreading information which is incorrect, slightly wrong, or sometimes just downright dangerous. The numbers appear to be huge. Spend any time looking online, you see lots of people doing this.
Absolutely. The prevalence of online misinformation in relation to cancer will potentially vary depending on the platform you're looking at, and the circles and potentially the influencers talking about this thing. And it's such a personal topic, right? My mom, she's a cancer survivor. She had two very large tumors in her colon, one the size of an orange, the other one the size of a grapefruit. And the amount of information that was sent to her from other cancer patients and in the little groups that she was taking part of, because everybody wants to help, right? It doesn't come from a place of malice generally. And she will then send these claims to me and I will say, Mommy, if you follow on this, it will make things a lot worse. Please, please, please. And then at one point she started to send everything to me so I could just help her alert others in her little group about some of the things being said. But you may have seen, Mike, some of the research recently conducted by the World Cancer Research Fund on misinformation. And what we're seeing now is extremely concerning because this information that we find online is now spilling over offline with nearly half of frontline NHS staff seen that at least once a week, inaccurate or misleading information about nutrition or supplements is being raised. And if you look at midwives or nurses, that numbers goes up to above 50%. So literally,
these numbers are enormous. Let's spend a moment, if we can, sort of looking at the source of some of this stuff, because the source, or it's picked up online from various people that, you know, like to post information. So if let's just kind of look at some of the why people would post some of this stuff, even if they're the originators of this thing. I mean, are these people that are just trying to peddle bizarre ideas to get lots of hits, lots of followers on social media just so they can make some money?
Well, there is that, right? The influencer economy. Obviously, some of the most perversive, harmful misinformation in relation to cancer, cancer cures, cancer prevention, do come from this disproportionately amplified accounts, some of them with a very high anti-medicine sentiment, literally just operating in a way that confirms our fears, and they're very welcoming. You build this parasocial relationship with them. But at the same time, it's not just these influencers to blame. Obviously, some of the things that they are doing are questionable. But if you look at their history, maybe when they started out, they were not as extreme or as controversial or as polarizing as we see now. And they are learning the game. They are learning how to play the algorithm. The algorithm rewards content that is emotionally charged, content that is extreme, that agitates, that makes you feel rage, rage against the system, rage against doctors. And I'm not saying that the NHS or healthcare in general is perfect. It's absolutely by no means perfect, but that is exploited as part of the narrative. In any case, the algorithm picks that up, and somebody who maybe had a few thousand followers, a year later, they have millions of followers. But I want to say something, Mike. When you look at the super spreaders of misinformation, they tend to be a very small number of accounts. And this minority, very loud, very agitating voices, rarely represent the silent majority. Most of us, we're doubtful. We didn't make up our mind yet, or we don't fall for those things. And
Yeah, that's true.
it's the play. Is it the algorithm to blame? Is it the influencer, or is it both, right?
Well, my interest here is, so you've got people peddling this kind of information. Are they interested? Do they have no morals? Or they just want to make some money and don't care if people take their advice and might die? Because that's the ultimate. Or do they really think they're right? I
That's
mean,
such a
what's
good
going on
question.
here?
Yes. Oh my God, there is a whole debate going on now, right? Some of these influencers may have started from a very genuine place, truly believing that something that they were doing was really good. But as the incentives keep coming back and they may sell more products, some of them may have realized, oh wow, and that ethical line may be crossed. And obviously, not everyone is aware that they are crossing that line. It's almost like the commercial incentives and the revenue being generated is putting the ethics on the side, whereas others, may be completely unethical from the get-go. But usually, many of them may believe what they are saying, or they may have said so many times that at one point they start believing themselves, right? So who knows? But these still are very minority individuals and accounts, disproportionately amplified. They should not be amplified in the first place. Remember, Mike, in the olden days, if somebody had a French view, they will go to Hyde Park, the speaker's corner, stand there for a
You can
few
still do that,
minutes,
actually.
give a rant, right?
I might go
Now,
there this afternoon.
yeah, exactly. Now they are very loud and they take a lot of space in our social media feeds, and the brain, our brain, cannot discern between actual consensus, what evidence is saying, versus likes, shares, number of views, number of comments. We tend to assign more credibility when we see something that has millions of reactions. That engagement does not mean evidence. It doesn't mean that something is evidence-based. And
Well,
that's a fine line for the brain to distinguish.
I mean, there are rules to stop people inciting, I don't know, hatred, racial hatred, all this kind of stuff, because that's very obvious. That can lead to real problems in society. This sort of stuff can lead to, well, potentially even greater problems in society. So, where does this stand legally? Because surely something needs to be done to kind of stop this, but. What can be done? Whose responsibility is it to try and do something? Or is it we just put our hands in the air and say, oh, it's too difficult?
So glad you mentioned that. So legally speaking, right now we have here in the UK Ofcom. Ofcom has begun regulating online spaces since 2023. They ask social media platforms, search engines, and now AI chatbots to provide risk assessments. And these companies, so for example, a social media platform like TikTok, Instagram, they have their own policies. And the government, because of the freedom of expression, government cannot censor speech. Government cannot moderate content, but government can still ask platforms to follow their own policies. However, these policies are not always followed. So you will have, for example, in TikTok, policies saying, well, if there is food crime and it's being committed in the post whereby an account is selling products that fall under criminal laws, such as the Miracle Mineral Solution, which is a bleach-based juice with orange juice and water, and it says it can cure your cancer, by the way. If they sell that, these platforms like TikTok will have their own policy saying they have to take that post down. Do you think they do? I went in yesterday, Mike, and this post is still there. There is a post selling this miracle mineral solution saying it's going to cure your cancer, and people commenting and asking, "Oh, how? What's the dose? Where can I get it?" And then you have the number where you can order it. So platforms are regulated, but the compliance and policing whether they are fulfilling their obligations under the Online Safety Act is not 100% there yet. And I was actually with Ofcom a couple of weeks ago with the online safety team telling them all about misinformation risk assessment. And obviously, Ofcom cannot regulate content, but they can regulate how platforms assess risk and mitigate systemic risks, so algorithmic risks, things that you are being recommended, and all of that. So hopefully at some point we can tackle the misinformation problem, especially the harmful misinformation problem. I'm not a pedantic intellectual who start arguing who is more right about a certain nutrient or a certain supplement. I'm somebody who cares about what's the harm if I'm to follow this recommendation, like taking colloidal silver drops to cure my cancer, or this miracle mineral solution to cure my cancer? What's the harm? Ingesting bleach is harmful, right? Are we seeing that? And that's where I mostly focus on.
Okay, we will come on to some more of that, but for now, this massive topic of sort of trying to control versus freedom of speech, I think maybe we should park that because we could probably have a whole series on that in the future. Let's move on a little bit to kind of demand for this stuff because there is a massive market for, I don't know, all weird and wonderful cures. So I suppose the next question is, you know, why is that happening and is it getting worse? And is it worse in places, you know, maybe the USA, which has, look, many people are uninsured for their health care. Here we're lucky we have the NHS, but you know, is there a demand and is it growing?
So interesting that you mentioned that. The prevalence of misinformation across countries will vary. At the moment, most of all online spaces, most of the misinformation is held 80% or more in social media platforms, both in the UK and the US and around the world. Now, you talked about things like detoxes or products like supplements. So, for example, the detox market is valued at around $76 billion globally right now.
I've
The
got some
supplements,
detox in my own
yes.
body for free. You know, I've got a couple of kidneys.
I know, right? Detox products like detox tea, detox this, detox that. Quite scary. Detox warming, like deworming, like literally consuming really dangerous substances that will allegedly cleanse your body from parasites or worms. Parasites. If you have parasites in your body, you will be in hospital right now. You will know right away, right? The body is really good at dealing with these things. And parasite infections can be quite serious, and we will see the effects immediately. So there is no such thing as deworming your parasites. You know, it's more complicated than that. Even the supplements market is valued at over $500 billion of annual earnings just last year. And these are products, Mike. I'm not just talking about the tablets and the soft gels. I'm talking about lollipops, gummies, powders,
Yeah. If you sit on the
effervescent
tube,
tablets, you name it, right?
this is something that I really have noticed. If you take a tube ride in London, you know, opposite each bank of seats, there's five adverts in front of each little section. It's not uncommon for three of those to be for supplements.
I know, right? Oh my goodness. We're bombarded by supplement information. And listen, the supplements market, the regulated market, right? That's the one that is worth 500 billion or more. But you also have the dark supplements market, the one that where you will be sold colloidal silver drops. There was this case of a man hospitalized with metal layering in his colon from consuming colloidal silver drops. So these are
Goodness.
not innocent remedies. They can do more harm than, you know, the thing you were trying to address in the first place. So the dark market for supplements, that's perhaps the one that I find the most scary. You go online, you buy something, and maybe it has a different substance than they are claiming to have in there, or the substance that they claim is helpful could be actually harmful. So it's very difficult to navigate all of this for consumers.
I mean, there is definitely a demand, obviously. And is that because we're getting more health conscious, or because people, I don't know, don't necessarily trust their doctor anymore, or don't trust the NHS, which seems a bizarre thing to say, but is that the case? What's going on?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, lots of explanations. Since the pandemic, we are more health conscious. There is quite a lot of research done on that. More people have turned to supplements. The year-on-year growth of the supplements market has increased, the detox market as well. Many people are seeking some of these alternative solutions. And in terms of medical professionals, my goodness, becoming a medical doctor is excruciating. You are talking about a decade, if not more, of very intensive training. And the medical profession, although the education here in the UK is actually quite good compared to many other countries, it doesn't necessarily focus on nutrition and lifestyle, sleep, physical activity, even your expertise, right? Back pain and flexibility, mobility, more increasingly perhaps pain reduction, but not as much as we would like to. So people are, of course, searching for other places that they cannot find. And now we have chatbots like ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude. We have not just our influencers in social media. So it's very difficult for all of us to navigate so much information. And there is a concept, Mike, I'm not sure if you've seen it. There is some research on medical silencing, also called medical gaslighting, right? Where in the olden days, now it's getting better, but in the olden days, we will not trust the patient's experiences. We will not believe that patients were reliable witnesses or narrators of their own experience of pain and suffering. So a lot of patient concerns were silenced and diminished or explained as, you know, just coming from the head. So when you go to a medical appointment and you're not listened to and the communication isn't 100% there, of course that trust is going to be eroded. But don't stop there. If you're disappointed with the doctor because they didn't have time to pay attention to your complaints or they didn't address what was in your mind, get a second opinion, right? Go to another GP practice, see if there is somebody else can help. There is no health communication, not real communication skills being taught in the medical profession. And that's perhaps where the influencers come in, because they are excellent communicators, right? Do you listen to your doctor only has 10 minutes versus a podcast of 2 hours where you can connect to everything they're saying?
Interesting. All right. So there's a big demand. There's people fulfilling the demand. What you touched on this a little bit already, but let's just revisit it. What does this actually mean for the NHS staff on the front line?
Oh, my goodness. It means that, OK, let me take a step back. Actually, if you look at the data from the World Cancer Research Fund that was released this week, you may have seen it in the news, right? Yes, we know that half of frontline NHS staff is facing misleading nutrition and supplement misinformation on a weekly basis. But what shocked me the most, and perhaps this is not where the news went, and they should, I hoped that it would be the topic of conversation, is that 40% of frontline NHS staff said they are not confident that the nutritional advice, the supplement advice they see online is correct. 40% of staff does not know how to deal with that, how to navigate that, where to find evidence-based advice on diet and supplements and nutrition. That is very concerning, right? So obviously, there is not sufficient training there yet. And it's challenging because correcting facts is not, you know, where we should be at either. So it's more about helping nutrition professionals, healthcare professionals, medical doctors, nurses, midwives, everyone in the healthcare system to not only learn for themselves how to navigate the complexity of our information environment, but to also help their patients with that.
Well, can I just tell them to look at the NHS website? I mean, that's pretty good.
Well, what's more exciting, the NHS website or some, you know, very charismatic influencer telling us what to do, right? The way we communicate information when it's evidence-based is not as exciting or as emotionally connecting with the audience. So I believe there is a big role for medical professionals, healthcare professionals, nutrition professionals to go there and become really good communicators of sound evidence, help their audiences. You know, if you are a medical professional, a doctor, a dietitian, a nutrition professional, it doesn't matter from which circle you come from, really doesn't matter. How can you help your patients, your clients, your audiences navigate information, discern what could be harmful and misleading and not just misleading on its own?
Interesting. There are so many things we're talking about here that I just feel was kind of scratching at the surface, and in the future could be a whole series. But for now, we are kind of stuck on time a little bit. So I'm going to move on to the next thing that I think is important to talk about. So if someone goes to an NHS professional or a doctor and they have cancer and they're given a course of treatment and they're going through that, they might also be listening to some crazy influencers who say, eat this, do that, and the next thing. Can they, in some instances, follow both courses of action?
Well, it's a yes and no answer. When we are being diagnosed with a condition, being cancer, being a food allergy, whatever it is, Mike, it is daunting, it is overwhelming, it is scary, right? So just having facts, just knowing what the treatment should be, sometimes doesn't feel comforting enough to calm that anxiety. So it's very normal, very common for us humans to look for places where we can help reduce that anxiety. Mm-hmm. So we will seek for people who maybe went through the same. And the individuals who may have gone through the same may perhaps give us hope, right, that things are going to get better. The sad part is that some of these individuals who went through the same may either be lying about it, as we know the case of this Australian influencer who faked her cancer. I remember those days.
I do.
She
really
built one of the most successful apps, and her cancer never existed. She never was she was never diagnosed with cancer, but she was relating to people, and people believed her. So
that's quite interesting. So, do you think she helped some people in spite of being completely untruthful, or do you think she kind of, sped up many people to their deaths?
Well, she was trying to peddle products. She definitely became she accumulated a lot of cash back in the day. That was quite unethical. There was a whole documentary covering her story. It was not great. What was the harmful part? Because she was saying, well, actually, with my cancer diagnosis, I engaged in this plant-based eating, and I took these supplements and these coffee enemas, and it really helped. Obviously, all of that was fake. And some people may have said, oh, wow, this, it looks quite innocent, doesn't Mike? Like, it doesn't look like a harmful piece of advice. The harmful part, Mike, is that cancers that are curable, we say cancer is curable when you have an 80% or more chance of survival when you undergo treatment, evidence-based treatment. Yeah, so your chances of living through your cancer are so much greater. So there is this research done where around 1 million cancer patients, the researchers looked at whether they follow through with the treatment, because they were curable cancers, 80% chances of survival or higher, or if they will opt for not that treatment, but alternative options such as herbal supplements, diets, alkaline eating. And what the researchers found in this sample is that the risk of dying doubled across those who opted to abandon cancer treatment in lieu for alternative therapies. So the alternative may be something that, may reduce our risk of or our chances of survival. So we need to be mindful of that. It's about informed decisions. Nobody's going to hold a hand on your head and say, okay, here's what you need to do. But just be mindful that, there are options, and know your statistics, right? Know that if you do this treatment, you have an 80% chance of surviving. If you do an alternative, method, your chances of dying may double. So it's about making informed decisions and knowing what may go wrong. Always, what could go wrong if I do this, no matter how innocent the advice may seem.
Goodness me, yeah. I mean, it can get quite complicated and quite intense quite quickly, really.
Yes.
Because, all these... It's not ethical to do the third test, which is do nothing.
Yes, it's challenging. I know my mom, when she was going through chemo, she was talking to me and she said, oh my gosh, it feels like this chemo is killing me. Yes, chemotherapy is, quite toxic. And enduring chemotherapy is challenging, it's painful. The symptoms are absolutely horrible. But know that at the end of the tunnel, there is light, and that cancer may be gone, right? You do have that 80% chance of survival, of course, when there is a curable cancer. And if the odds are against you, there is no shame in having all of the science-based advice that you can possibly get from the NHS, from your clinicians, and then support that with complementary approaches, right, to support your body's defenses and your strength.
Okay, all right. And just eating well, that's
yes.
that's going to be a good thing, which a lot of this advice is about. Now, I do know that in this press release that came out, there's some advice on looking at some of this other information that might not come from your doctor but might be sloshing around on the internet. And that has this acronym TRUST, which seemed like potentially quite useful. Are you familiar with that? Can you take us through that?
Yes, I actually helped refine it with the team at the World Cancer Research. Such a talented team. I love working with them. We wanted to come up with something that didn't tell you, Mike, or your audience, what to eat, how to eat, what to believe, what not to believe, because that's up to you. I'm not here to tell you what to believe, right? However, my job and the job that the World Cancer Research Fund is doing, which is amazing, is helping you navigate information in a way that encourages you to feel more confident about your ability to discern what could go wrong, what could be harmful. So yes, we call it the trust test. Again, it's a way to filter out potentially harmful, misleading claims that you may encounter
Sure.
online, ChatGPT, search
Okay.
engines,
So
friends,
take us through it.
family.
Take us through it, letter by
Yes, of
letter.
course. So the trust test is an acronym. The T, too good to be true. Does it promise unrealistic results, quick fixes, cures? R for research backed. Does it trace back to scientific evidence rather than personal stories or opinions?
So
Is
how can
it
people know that actually? Because that can be quite hard to really pin
very
down.
hard? Very hard. There are influencers who show evidence by citation. So they will put a post with lots of citations. And then some of those citations are fake, they don't exist. Or then when you open the scientific paper, it doesn't match with what they are saying, right? Developing these skills at an early age will be beautiful, right? I know the government now is more committed to teaching youngsters to discern misleading advice, and building that scientific literacy can be very helpful. Mike, I know your wife is a scientist, right? So knowing how to do that can be a very useful skill. Shall I
Yeah, quite
continue with
time
the next one?
consuming. Quite sorry. Yeah, let's park that because a lot can be said about that as well. Let's go on to you.
Yes, the you understood. Has the person sharing or the chatbot sharing the information explained the dangers, the risks, or were these harms downplayed? Were there any promotion of unproven remedies, over appropriate effective medical care? Well, we have so much evidence about really good medical care. Doctors are here to help you, right? It's just us advocating for ourselves. It's not easy, right? Appointment times are so short and so limited. So yes, us understanding how to navigate this can be perhaps understood is the one that I'm the most attached to, because I want us to think, what could go wrong if I follow on this advice? S for source quality. Does it come from a trusted organization, a scientific source, somebody who cares about the evidence? And also, what do other experts say, right? It's not just the opinion of one person, one influencer, one chatbot. What do others say? Is there a scientific consensus? Is there a clinical guideline? And there are amazing websites, the WHO, the NHS. Yes, it's not as exciting the information that you find there, but generally speaking, it can be quite helpful. And T, think before you share. If it doesn't pass the trust test, if you don't trust it, please don't pass it on, okay? This is about your trust. You are in charge of your cognitive abilities, your ability to discern what could be harmful or not. So this is about empowering you, Mike, and everyone else listening.
Okay, that's a really good list of things to go through there, because we are bombarded with this stuff daily, and if people have cancer and they start doing searches related to that sort of thing, they will get bombarded even more because the algorithms will just gang up on them and send them
Yes.
all this stuff. So it's important for them to be able to go through this kind of thing. Final question, if well, for anyone really, but certainly if someone's in this situation, or you have a family member or a friend that is, if you want to get some good proper sources of information, maybe just going through this trust idea again, what are some good sources, some good websites that are trustworthy, are not kind of full of people that are just trying to sell you stuff that won't work so they can just make money, either because they don't care, they have no morals, or because they are just misinformed. Where can people look?
Of course, the World Cancer Research Fund, they've been working with dieticians, with doctors, researchers, developing amazing, beautiful, easy to understand, accessible, fun resources. I mean, their website is just spectacular. It keeps getting better and better. It's just so beautiful. It has recipes for you. There is indeed a recognition that, yes, diet plays a role in cancer development, smoking, alcohol intake. There are many environmental and lifestyle factors that can indeed influence our risk of cancer. And based on their assessment of the evidence, large amounts of evidence, they have a database of 12,000 scientific papers that they have scrutinized or even challenged. They can tell today that 40% of all cancers are preventable, meaning we can indeed mitigate the risk of either developing or coming back through lifestyle and diet factors. And they recognize that they are not denying the role of diet and nutrition. So they are amazing. I love that lifestyle medicine is also playing a bigger role as well in cancer prevention and cancer treatment.
Very good. Okay, you mentioned the website. What's the actual address?
So if you go to WCRF, let me quickly check that one, Mike. WCRF.org, WCRF.org.
Excellent. Okay, very useful. Look, we have covered an awful lot of ground today, but I think it's very important ground. So, Alex, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
My pleasure. It's been a pleasure, Mike. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much to my guest this week. And she was Alex Rouhani from UCL, University College London. We were talking about cancer misinformation. Thank you to you for listening and have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.